It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
For more than 40 years, Sam Daly Harris has worked to help people find ways to make democracy viable. He advocates deep listening and engaging face-to-face with members of Congress. It's about working beyond just donating money, signing petitions, and writing letters to the editor. It's about deep engagement and participating in a cause that you care about. Daly Harris is all about lighting the fire of each of us to make a difference in the world as he provides powerful structures of support so that our courage is what drives us, not our fear. Sam Daly Harris founded Results and the Results Educational Fund in 1980. Results is an international grassroots citizens' lobby committed to healing the break between people and government and creating the political will to end hunger and the worst aspects of poverty. He's the author of Reclaiming Our Democracy, Every Citizen's Guide to Transformational Advocacy, the 2024 Completely Revised Edition. So please join us for the next hour as we explore turning ordinary people into powerful advocates with our guest, Sam Daly Harris. I'm speaking with Sam at his home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Sam, welcome.
It's wonderful to be with you.
It's great to have you with me once more. We've been together before, and it seems like now is an even more important time to have this conversation. So I want to ask you, what inspired you to release a revised edition of this book that you've written?
Well, let me just say it this way. I did an interview last year that really expressed why re-release the book in a revised issue. I was quite moved. It was a national radio interview, and I was quite moved by the vulnerability of the interviewer. This is question number two. He said, the passive nature to our politics now, you can feel beat down by it. I mean, this is my career, and I feel beat down by it. I don't participate the same way others do because I'm a political journalist, but I do have to pay attention. It's a grind. It's a grind, Sam. I mean, I know you know that. What am I feeling? What is the way out of that? And that agony, we could call it, is really why I felt the book needed to be re-released. And if I could, one of the things I said to him was, Apollo astronaut Rusty Schweikert said, we aren't passengers on spaceship Earth. We're the crew. Well, are we? And if we are, how does crew operate? And the second thing I said was, futurists and climate activists, Alex Steffen said, in fact, these days, cynicism is obedience. Well, yeah, if I'm cynical, I'm obedient to the way things are. I'm not going to do anything about it. Why would I if nothing I do makes a difference? So the why re-release this book updated is just to really address the understandable but needless cynicism and powerlessness so many people feel.
Exactly. I get that. And I know that we're all concerned across the political spectrum of a broken federal government. I mean, that has come up over and over. But you talk about, and you shift the energy toward broken citizenry. So what do you mean by that, Sam?
Well, I'm going to tell you what I mean by that by telling my story of self. It was developed by Marshall Ganz, professor at Harvard, and it basically asks, what happened in your life and what decisions did you make that got you to this commitment? So when I tell my story of self, I really urge people to think about theirs. What happened in your life and what decisions did you make to be listening to New Dimensions and doing the things that you do? So here's my story of self, which gets to your question, the brokenness of citizens. I have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in music, and I played percussion instruments in the Miami Philharmonic Orchestra for 12 years and taught high school music. And then 45 years ago, I founded the Anti-Poverty Lobby. Results in a lot of time, I'm asked, music, poverty lobby, what's the connection? And when I look back in my life, there's certain experiences that start pointing me in a different direction. The death of a friend around high school graduation in 1964, and the assassination of U.S. Senator Robert Kennedy around college graduation in 1968 got me to asking the questions of purpose. Why am I here? What am I here to do? What's my purpose? 9 years later, 1977, I'm invited to a presentation on ending world hunger put on by the Hunger Project. And I go to this thing thinking, well, hunger's inevitable. What do I know? I'm a musician. I'm thinking, well, there must be no solutions. Again, what do I know? Because if there were solutions, somebody would have done something by now. But I go to this event, and it's obvious right away, there's no mystery to growing food, clean water, basic health, literacy. I'm not hopeless about the perceived lack of solutions. I'm hopeless about human nature. People will just never get around to doing the things that can be done. But there's one human nature I have some control over, my own, and my questions, why am I here? What am I here to do? So I get involved in a big way. This is the end of the story. And it gets to my first experience of the brokenness of us as citizens. In 1978 and 1979, I spoke to 7,000 high school students on ending world hunger, classroom by classroom. And before I went into the first classroom, I read some statements from Jimmy Carter's Commission on World Hunger calling for the political will to end hunger. So I asked 7,000 high school students, what's the name of your member of Congress? I don't want to know if you wrote them. I don't want to know if just the name. Out of 7,000 asked, 200, fewer than 3%, could answer correctly. 6,800, over 97%, could not tell me the name of their member of Congress. And results grew out of this gap between the calls for the political will to end hunger on the one hand and the lack of basic information on who represented us in Washington on the other. So very early on, I saw the high school students I asked the question of are now in their 60s. So I saw the brokenness very early on.
When I hear you say that, I'm reminded I have to keep on my computer a crib sheet. You know, and I click on my representatives and I keep like a running tally. Right. Who's my local, like city council? Who's my county representative? What district am I in? I can never remember it. So I have to look it up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my state and then my congressional. And in fact, just the other day, I asked Perplexity, I think is where I went. I asked it. What did my representative, congressional representative, do about the aggression or the what's happening in Israel and Gaza? Where does he stand?
Right.
And it was really good. So I wrote out this whole piece and about where he stood. I felt pretty good about it. But You know, Sam, because I've just finished your book, I realized I need to get in touch with him and congratulate him on where he's standing. But also, I need to encourage him on that trajectory, because I can't be sure that he's going to continue on that. Yes. And this is part of the whole thing. Please help us.
If I could tell you about what we call in the trajectory is the champion scale. A lot of times I'm told, well, my member of Congress, he's so backward, there's no reason to meet with him. No, no, no. You want to move opposed up to neutral and neutral up to supporter. And then people say to me, well, you know, my member of Congress is good on all these. He's really a big supporter. There's no reason to meet with. No, no. You want to move supporters up to being advocates, and advocates, let's call it in Congress, any elected official, up to being a leader and eventually a champion on the issues that you care about. And so we use that champion scale. Let me give you one other example. If I'm coaching a group that's meeting with a member of Congress who opposes their bill, I have them ask three questions. Question number one, we know you don't support this bill. What would it take to change your mind? And you're listening for assignments. I'll tell a story about that in a moment. What would it take to change your mind? Two, could you say more about that? Three, why do you think that is? So it's basically a deep listening exercise, because your goal, while you'd like them to support the bill, your ultimate goal is a relationship, building a real strong relationship. So it's not that bill only, but the other things you care about, that they're working with you in partnership. And I have a friend, he's in Pennsylvania, and he went to, he wanted to start a climate solutions caucus with Democrats and Republicans. It was going to be Noah's Ark style. If there were five Republicans, there would be five Democrats coming on together. And he went to South Florida because of sea level rise and because there were Republicans and Democrats in Congress down there. Member of Congress said, what would it take to change your mind? Member of Congress says, well, if you could get the Chambers of Commerce on board. So he's listening for assignments, and he did. Miami, Miami Beach, Coral Gables, comes back with the letters, and the member of Congress says, well, if you could get the mayors on board. So he's listening to assignments. Yeah, and he did. Mayor letters, Miami, Miami Beach, Coral Gables. And so that champion scale is an exercise in deep listening in order to build relationship, and you're listening for assignments. And it's a step from getting opposed up to neutral and eventually supporter, advocate, leader, and someday champion.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I know that we're talking about, if we're going to go beyond the mouse click, you know, which is so easy. We get all those emails or texts or whatever, and it says, okay, support this, and mostly give us money is what they're asking for. They're giving a come on, and then they say, please give us money. And so, and or sign this petition. But to go beyond that, Sam, takes a commitment. It's an embodied commitment. It's not just an exercise in some sort of intellectual exercise. It's actually showing up with our bodies.
Yes, yes, yes. So let me give you some statistics first and then talk about that a little more deeply. The Congressional Management Foundation did a survey of grassroots advocacy professionals, advocacy staff, and they asked them, what is your primary tactic with staff to your volunteers? 79% said an email form letter was their 79% email form letter, you know, give me your name and your zip code and we'll send a letter for you kind of thing. They asked congressional staff about what was the most effective forms of action. Only 3% said an email form letter was highly effective. 94% said in-person constituent visits on issues were 94% said they were highly or effective, either highly effective or effective. And so we're fed a lot of not very effective actions to take. But then going that next step is a whole other level of embodiment, as you described it. So let me make the big distinction in the book, transformational advocacy. Mm-hmm. So everyone knows transactional advocacy, sign the petition, transaction complete. But with transformational advocacy, you're trained, encouraged, and succeed at doing things as an advocate you never thought you could do, like meet with a member of Congress and bring them on board to your issue. And when you do those things you never thought you could do, you see yourself differently. You see yourself in a new light. That's the transformation. Kind of like I can't to I just did. I'll give one quick story from the book. There's a woman, I say she's an amazing woman. She is, but we're all amazing if we get the right community and we get the right training. Her name's Maxine Thomas. And she said to me, I have a heart for service, but I was clueless about advocacy, especially political advocacy. And eventually, it's a longer story, but eventually she finds results, the anti-poverty lobby I founded. She joins results and she gets a scholarship to go to the results conference from Indiana to Washington, D.C. And she has this full day of first ever meetings with her members of Congress. And at the end of those meetings, she says, I was euphoric. I was on this high and felt I was part of something revolutionary. From I was clueless to I was euphoric, that's the transformational advocacy. She saw herself completely differently. And it's a good example of what we're talking about.
You know, with that, Sam, it's there are lots of wonderful volunteers that are volunteering for food banks or domestic violence shelters or tree planting or cleaning up the local creeks or whatever it is. Yeah. These are very, very dedicated volunteers.
Yes.
And what you're saying is that there is something more that can be done, that this group of people that are so dedicated can be amplified to be very effective. Am I getting this right?
Yes. Let me just kind of say it this way. If you're working in a food shelter or a food pantry, do that. If you're planting trees, do that. But also know that what Congress does and what the government does affects what's going on in the food pantry, affects what's going on with the tree planting. And not only that, when you meet with an elected official or their staff, they want to hear what it is, what's going on in the community in that pantry or in that tree planting or whatever it is. They want to know what's happening with the constituents. And so it's really, really important. I'm going to tell this quick story because it's very recently in mid-2025. One of the groups I just started coaching this year in 2025 is the United Church of Christ Climate Hope Affiliates. And they started their first chapter in March, and now they have mid.
Now, is this related to Mormonism?
No. The United Church of Christ is a mainline Protestant, Presbyterian.
Thank you.
UCC, yeah. And they started their first chapter in March. They have eight in the middle of 2025. And they part of their methodology, which I coach them on, is a monthly webinar with guest speakers and Q&A and inspiration. And one of the pieces is a grassroots victory, where a volunteer talks about a victory, but they include the struggle. So people listening don't go, oh, they're experts, we're not experts, they could do it, we could never do it. No, they hear the grassroots victory preceded by the struggle to get to the victory. And there was a recent grassroots victory. A pastor in Oakland, California, Reverend Lori Manning, who talked about getting word that she had 72 hours notice before they were going to meet with their senator's aide. And she said, well, at first I panicked, but we had training. And so we pulled it together. And she said, you know, we started by asking the aide things. He wanted to tell us, he wanted to coach us in being better advocates. Then we talked about climate change in Northern California and recovering from fires. And that was our expertise, even though they had more than that because they'd been coached. So, you know, in the same sense, you know, your work in the food pantry, your work planting trees, et cetera, that is your expertise that you bring also with you. And it what Congress does, and maybe painfully these days, affects the community work that you're already doing.
Exactly. And I'm thinking that when we join together with others, so we're not isolated as far as it's not up to me to do all the research. All right, here's my own example. Okay, I'm part of something called Vintage Vanguard, and we're a committee local where I live that have gotten together to be politically active, and we meet and we decide what is our issue, what do we care about, what's really moving us. And we all decided at one point that it was we wanted to educate our legislatures, all those people who are elected who do not know the difference between affordable housing and low-income housing. Those are two very different things that we personally were experiencing. And that when you do affordable housing, it's based on the median income of the place. So if where you're living is getting really gentrified, that medium income is going way up. And so affordable housing may not even be affordable for those of us on low income. So that was we were able to make a dent in that. However, sustainability. How do we sustain something like that? Because I must say that after 10 years of meeting, you know, we're older, some people are having health problems, and we're not meeting like we used to.
Yeah.
So what's your advice about that kind of sustainability of a certain group?
Yes. So when I'm talking to a group, I tell them to look for three things to see if the organization they're connecting with is working to deliver transformational advocacy. So one is, and you mentioned it, one is recruitment and community building. They bring new people in, not to build an e-blast list, but to form them into local chapters so they're not working alone. That's the recruitment part. Community building, again, might include a whole of organization monthly webinar with guest speakers and Q&A and inspiration. So recruitment and community building too. Training. How do you get the meeting with the elected? How do you plan for the meeting? What do you ask for in the meeting? How do you write a letter to the editor? Two, training. Three, the organization encourages breakthroughs. There's a drawing in Reclaiming Our Democracy of a small circle labeled your comfort zone. And next to it is a much larger circle labeled where the magic happens. Mm. And you're looking for an organization that doesn't kick you out of your comfort zone, but encourages you out of your comfort zone to do things you never thought you could do, because that's when confidence grows. So you're looking for, in my case, it's either a statewide or national organization to connect with that is committed to recruitment and community building, training, and encouraging breakthroughs.
Well, I'm thinking as you're talking about this, going back to Marshall Ganson's story of self, and where he's saying, like, make your values visible, you know, and get into your emotional engagement, And so in that way, if there's so if we take that inventory for ourselves and understand what we value and what is kind of lighting us up, you know, you can feel it in your heart when you find an issue and you go, yes, that one feels like I want to do some work there. That's where it takes some research to find what other groups are working on this and then join other groups. Is that it?
That's right. It might be a statewide group and you're working on a more state-affected issue, or it might be a national group and you're working on a national or international issue that can provide you some of that research anyway, so you're not always starting from scratch in the work you're doing. And you mentioned Marshall Gans again. The other thing that he calls the story of self is knowing your why and sharing it. And so to know your why and not keep it a secret, but share it with others is really an inspiring activity.
And this comes from your own story. It's not like convincing people that they need to change their mind. It's just the sharing, like, wow, I am so enthused about this. And this is why, this is what happened in my life that really ignited me and for this issue. Is that, am I getting that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. And we're going to talk more about this in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Sam Daly Harris, and he's the author of Reclaiming Our Democracy, Every Citizen's Guide to Transformational Advocacy. And this is as opposed to transactional advocacy. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to the website and there's places to sign up and be in contact with him and get him to come to your own place or do a webinar with you. It's reclaimingourdemocracy.com.
Yeah, if listeners go to the reclaimingourdemocracy.com website and click on learn more, there's a sign-up sheet where they can say, help me get connected with this kind of group that works on peace or climate or poverty issues. And you could also let me know if you'd like me to speak to one of your groups, a book group or a faith group or whatever it is, a class even. And that's one way to where I can help you get engaged.
That's so great that you're available for that. It's reclaimingourdemocracy.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Sam Daly Harris, and he is the author of Reclaiming Our Democracy, which is a 2024 revision and update version, as we really need this right now. Are you hopeful right now about the future? What's giving you hope these days, Sam?
Well, okay, great. I'm going to give a little bit of a longer answer, but it really is one of my big moments of hope recently. You know, the anti-poverty lobby results is the activists have lobbied on child survival issues globally for 41 years. And when we started in 1984, UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund, was reporting 40,000 child deaths a day from largely preventable things, things like measles, coupled with malnutrition. And the volunteers and results and others have lobbied for over 40 years, and the global child death rate has fallen by 66 6% from 40,000 a day back in the early 80s.